a fact that Seiki appreciated.
Who's clone?
Seiki blinked. Who's what? Kazuki? Suggested Sachio of the West Defenders, level 15, who was apparently Oryoshi, with a short crossbow in his hand. Umiko shook her head.
No, Kazuki was there. Who else? Reiji? Seiya? Tsuneko?
She paused slightly between the names to check Seiki's reaction. Seiki simply shook his head.
Come on, cried Umiko. They would never trust a random stranger.
Well, I think they were asking me to join their clan, said Seiki. Actually, he was not entirely sure about the society, but the White Crane Order definitely made their intentions clear. Umiko grimaced.
Fine, whatever you say. You have the unique?
No, said Seiki, noting the fact that this confirmed that they were truly after the Horn of the Ox Demon.
Who's got it?
He sighed. Look, you won't get anything useful talking to me, Seiki said honestly. I don't know what is going on between you people, and I don't want to take sides.
Did they give it to you? Or did the Obake take it?
So at least Kiku made it out of there alive. This might also suggest that no one else did. Seiki just looked at them without answering. Maybe he's really not one of them, Sachio whispered. Umiko frowned and muttered,
These are our peers we're talking about. They do stuff like this.
Then she said aloud,
Okay, whoever you are, I'm guessing Reiji. Nobuki wants a word.
I'm not Reiji, he said. Basing this on Ikumi's example, Seiki did not fail to see why she would think so. Out of the blue, Sachio cried, Our lord, the great Nobuki of the West Defenders, would like an audience with you, Mr. Sword Person. Then he noticed Umiko glaring at him. Hey, gotta talk to our peers like that or they don't respond. Seiki could not hold back his laughter. Even if they killed him right now, it would still be rather funny. Sorry, guys, can't help you here. They had not resorted to violence as their first measure, so there was a chance that they might be reasonable people, and he started making his way forward.
Okay, Reiji.
Umiko took a deep breath as if preparing for a speech.
Listen, this is how the game's meant to be played. The uniques are meant to be used on real content. It's completely useless with the society.
They had not reacted to Seiki's expressed intent of going on his way, and he tensed as he walked past them, since his sword was sheathed and there would be no time to parry in close range. But Umiko made no attempt to stop him. Her voice grew louder and seemed genuinely upset.
We're pushing the end boss of the Kakoku Fields event right now. You understand? That unlocks the next event for freaking everyone else. So you people need to stop being selfish.
That made Seiki pause. It was the first time he had heard anything about this, and if it was true, her argument was perfectly reasonable. He turned to look at her. I'll pass on your message, he said. His honest tone apparently surprised her, and she stared at him for a moment.
You know where we are,
said Umiko.
Come talk to us once you've thought about it, okay, Reiji? I know you ran with the Red Dawn people the other day, so I know you do war games. Well, that's exactly our thing, so you can join us. We're always open to new members.
If she was determined to believe that he was Reiji, there was nothing to be done. I'll pass on the message to Reiji, too, if I ever come across him, said Seiki. He was turning around when he felt jagged metal around his ankles.
Nobuki said not to hurt him,
cried Umiko. It was a Ryoshi trap. The sharp teeth clamped tightly around Seiki's feet, securing him in place, but they did no damage. Trap doesn't hurt, Sachio pointed out, and the guy's getting away. Seiki counted 4 seconds for the trap to expire, but obviously Sachio was doing the same thing. At the exact moment the first trap faded, another landed on Seiki. He knew struggling was futile and grabbed the hilt of his sword in case the Ryoshi tried to attack. Hey, I want no trouble, said Seiki. He would probably be able to defend himself against a level 10, as long as Umiko stayed out of it.
Well, let him go,
cried Umiko, furious at her clanmate.
Is this really worth the patrols right now?
I didn't hurt him, all right, cried Sachio. Next thing they knew, the Ryoshi let out a yelp and staggered backward as 2 arrows pierced him in the shoulder. Seiki turned around in surprise. Yamura of the Honor Warriors, level 9, in all green leather gear, was staring at them with a bewildered look, a longbow in his right hand. His fingers were already reaching for more arrows from the quiver on his back.
Run, man!
Cried Yamura, letting loose another arrow, which Umiko parried with a clang. The trap loosened as it expired and Seiki dashed forward. Sachio had already returned shots against the Ryoshi, and Seiki spun around and parried one of the arrows as several more flew past them.
Go, go!
Yamura yelled as he ran after Seiki, tossing out his own traps behind them. Glancing in his back, Seiki saw that Sachio was trying to pursue, but Umiko grabbed hold of his arm and they broke out into a yelling match about what Nobuki wanted. They turned right at the end of the alley and were back in the safety of South City, just as they heard someone yell, "Brawl! Keep running," said Yamura as Seiki slowed down. "Patrols!" "Right," said Seiki. Then he noticed something and gave a thumbs up. "You made it."
"What?"
"Honor warriors." Yamura winked. "Oh, yeah." The alleys ahead were starting to look familiar, since Seiki pretty much knew all the roads in South City by heart now. "Yanagi!" Yamura announced his destination as they continued to sprint. Yamura was right, and the patrols did come after them. Before long, they could hear the gallops of a single rider. Seiki had not returned an attack, since parry was essentially a dodge and did not count as aggression, so technically the patrols would not touch him. But since Yamura was running, Seiki kept him company.
"I swear I do this 3 times a day, muttered Yamura. "This is all we do. You try to go somewhere, brawl. You try to get to the Shogun, brawl. What a waste of time."
"Hey," said Seiki. "Thanks." He was quite sure the West Defenders people would have eventually let him go, but he appreciated Yamura's gesture. Yamura shrugged.
"Join us," said the Ryoshi. 150 Shogun reps and they accept you. You rarely get passing one-shots anymore. The mates are pretty cool, too. Too bad not many of them are in South City."
This was the 4th time that someone had asked him to join a clan within the past hour. Seiki shook his head in disbelief.
"What?" asked Yamura.
They had come to a small intersection with low bamboo walls, and Yamura decided not to wait for an answer.
"Let's split up here. I'm going to Yanagi, so you take this left to your dojo, okay? There's only one patrol, so we split the chance, so at least one of us can stop."
With that, the Ryoshi ran down the lane.
"Come with me and some of my mates to do a Shogun mission in about 30 minutes,
he shouted as he disappeared around the corner. He presumably continued to shout some details, but was then too far away for them to be intelligible. Seiki stopped running to address the mounted patrol.
"Officer, could you point me to Mani Shrine?" he asked.
His theory about parry was right, and the mounted city patrol paid him no attention as he galloped down the road.
"Sorry, young man. Busy on official duty."
Yanagi Alley was near, and Seiki was quite sure that Yamura would have made it. As the gallops died down, Seiki found himself in the familiar scene of South City. The night was late, and the nameless citizens of the area no longer roamed the streets with their dim lamps. Surrounded by this calm and peacefulness, Seiki was hit by the kind of exhaustion one often experiences when coming home from a long journey. Seiki started wandering aimlessly toward the general direction of the dojo. Down one alley, he encountered a scrawny thief, level 4, lurking with his cloth bundle on his back, whom Seiki did not bother with anymore. A cool wind lifted and shook the shadowy curtains of the willows along the road, and Seiki looked fondly around at the quiet night scene. Without really noticing, Seiki had made his way back to the dojo. The place had a front door, but he had always used the rear that opened into the courtyard behind the practice hall. He had expected to find the bare, half-burnt platform. However, to his delight, the wall of the dojo was now up again and the roof was almost half-finished.
"That was quick," said Seiki out loud.
He noted wooden planks and bags of sand strewn around the courtyard, suggesting that rigorous work had been done during the day.
"Yes. Thanks to your 200 gold that bought the roof tiles, Seiki."
It was Master Tsujihara's voice. Seiki lifted his chin up and discovered the old man sitting in the middle of the roof.
"Join me," the master said, nodding toward a ladder propped up against the end of the wall, which must have been left by the roof tilers.
Seiki climbed up the narrow ladder and made his way toward the old man. The roof edge that flattened out near the end provided a convenient sitting spot. One could recline back on the sloping roof, which was why Seiki had not noticed the old man at first. Now, as Seiki approached, the master sat up and Seiki spotted a tray with a small bottle and 2 cups.
"So you were expecting me, Master Tsujihara," said Seiki.
Technically, it had only been a day since he had left the old man, but it had felt much longer.
"Who said this was for you?"
said the master, but he filled both cups nonetheless as Seiki sat down beside him. He then picked one up and nodded to Seiki, who followed suit. The cup was tiny and the clear liquid shining white as it reflected the full moon above. Seiki glanced up at the serene disk of white hanging high in the sky.
"Quest accepted. Knight on the Roof. Level 8. Knight on the Roof. Level 8 quest information. Talk to Master Tsujihara and learn more about the past. You will receive 85 XP.
"Lots of experience for drinking," noted Seiki in amusement. Master Tsujihara had downed his cup, so Seiki lifted his and drank it in one go. He had not expected the fire. The liquor was hot,
Not in temperature, but in its bitter, burning taste that was also intensely sweet. It ultimately made him feel like he had just swallowed a most exquisite kind of liquid flames. Siki almost coughed as the sparkling sear passed down his throat and instantly warmed his stomach. Then it hit him hard with a dizzying sensation. You are now 40% drunk. Siki let out a weak curse without meaning to. The fuzzy warmth was spreading fast through his body and his head was almost spinning, but not in an unpleasant way. What is this thing? He asked the master. The old man chuckled. Good wine, he replied. The effect had reached Siki's fingers now and they were tingling in waves. I can tell you it's totally not like this in real life. He had now changed his mind about the kakigori being the best thing to consume in Shinchioka. That's just because you have never had good wine, said the master. Seki wiped his smiling lips with the back of his hand. Is that so, Master Sugihara? The old man was looking out toward the city. He sighed. Look at Shinchioka. Seki followed his gaze. The full moon was shining down on the sleepless city below, dwarfing its numerous lamplights. South City was full of smaller houses, which lay quietly in a still, uneven sea of dark gray. Further away were the taller and more distinctive buildings of East and West City, with shrines rising high, flaunting their sophisticated, slanted roofs. At the back, climbing up onto the side of a gentle hill, towered the Palace District, with large, symmetrical buildings whose tiny dots of brightly lit windows overlooked the whole capital. It was a scene of silent calm that almost made it look like a painting. Soon, a breeze, unusually cool on his warm skin, carried over faint sounds of merrymaking from the lively West City, where intelligible bits of conversation and songs could be heard. Siki had to sigh, too. They sat in silence for a while as they took in the view. Master Tsujihara, Siki finally said, do you know someone called Shose? He did not want to ruin the moment, but this had to go somewhere. Yes, said the old man. He was my old master. He paused and looked at Seki. Since you are asking me this question, I believe the second Master Shose paid you a visit. Seki nodded. He's the one who set the dojo on fire. I know, said the old man. Did he hurt you? Yes, but no. Siki scratched his nose. Actually, he taught me parry. He checked the old man's expression to see what he thought about it, but Master Tsujihara just raised an eyebrow. If you ask me, I'd rather get all my abilities from you, Siki added. The old man returned his gaze to the restless city. Did he set his kamaitachi on you? Siki wrinkled his nose. In fact, he did. The old master used to have us practice on these things, said Master Tsujihara rather fondly. He said it would teach us to use our eyes, as well as to keep track of our own health, seeing that you cannot rely on instincts with them. The mountain was full of them. The old man sighed. That was such a long time ago. Can't really imagine you as a young man. I never was one, Siki. I was always meant to be old. Siki laughed. True. He was not sure if the old man just really broke realism for the sake of a joke. Another brief silence fell. Well, Siki took a deep breath. For some reason, he had been slightly worried about this question. Shose seems to think that you're betraying the shogun. I mean, if that's who he meant by his lord. The old man grimaced before letting out a long, melancholic sigh. He is mistaken. Siki waited for him to continue. I made a vow, the same one twice, Siki, and I do not intend to break it. The old man's stare rose to the starry sky as if in recollection. My old master was a loyal man. There were many who were displeased with the shogun's treatment of him, so he asked all his students to vow to serve the interest of Shinchioka and never engage in any resistance against the shogun. That did not really answer the question. Why would his son think you were betraying the shogun, then? The younger Shose can be quite stubborn, said the old man, as if remembering something from the past. If he's got his mind set on something, he would trust it to the end. That still did not answer the question, and Siki was feeling a little worried that the old man was avoiding the subject. Don't get me wrong. If you say you didn't, I'll believe you. The old man turned to meet Siki's eyes. I did not break my vow, Siki. I understand why you feel you must ask, and I can tell you that I did not. There was something powerful in how he said it, and Seki averted his gaze. I'm sorry, Master Sugihara. I believe you. I just had to make sure. He was relieved that this was not the kind of past the quest was asking him to dig into. The Shogun is under much pressure, you know, the old man continued. He may have made some terrible judgment in the past, but I do not hold it against him. After all, defending the city is a tremendous burden. He sighed as he looked toward the left, beyond the west gate, where it was completely black. Somehow the moonlight did not seem to illuminate that part of the scene, and Seki stared into a patch of pure darkness. This war has been raging for decades, the old man said, with no end in sight. The demonic clan, said Seki. So this is the past, then. Master Tsujihara smiled. I know you encountered them when I sent you to Commander Nakatani. You did Shinchioka a great service when you saved the ambassador, Seki. He then turned back to appreciate the moon. She did a pretty good job in saving herself, Seki answered. Then he waited a while, but the old man said nothing else. Really now? No history lesson on the demonic clan, Master Sugihara? Now that you've encountered them, there is nothing I know that you don't, said the master with perhaps fake annoyance. They try to take over Shinchioka. Most of them say nothing as they try to kill you. The leaders talk, and they are after seeds of light, which they corrupt into seeds of shadow, which seem to give them power. But no one knows what they actually are. Seki laughed at the rather honest, if unelegant, explanation. That is very straight to the point. And they have unique darkness-related abilities, added Master Tsujihara, to keep up with the theme, you see. Seki chuckled and shook his head as the old man flirted dangerously with the edge of realism. Yeah, their commander has this fear effect that... Seki stopped as a disturbing feeling flooded him. The darkness beyond the west gate seemed to be devouring every source of light and keeping the moonlight at bay, and there was something truly sinister about that sight. Seki took a deep breath as he shifted his gaze toward the moon instead, taking in its white calmness. You know, Master Sugihara, that effect, he confided. I feel like that every night. The area suddenly seemed incredibly quiet. I hate going to sleep, said Seki after a long pause. It was often full of nightmares of falling into a pit of darkness. Because afterward I keep wanting to wake up, but then I realize I'm already awake. The old man was still silent, and Seki hoped that he was listening, and at the same time hoping that he was not. He buried his head in his hands. I really have no idea what I'm going to do, Master Sugihara. There were still two-thirds of his life ahead of him, and that thought was terrifying. That's when he felt the old man's hand land on his shoulder. Talk to people around you, Seki. You might think you know all there is to know, but if you really set your mind to exploring every option, you might find that the world has more to offer than you thought it could. Seki stared at him. Master Sugihara poured another round and handed him his cup. Let's drink to the future, said the old man. Seki started laughing very hard. What a future that is going to be, Master Sugihara. But I guess why not? The pleasant burn washed through him again as he swallowed the wine. You are now 80% drunk. You know, I like this place a lot, said Seki. He felt very warm and comfortable now, and a part of him was wondering if he was indeed inebriated. I should come here more. You wouldn't mind me practicing here, would you? Of course not, said the old man. You'd better teach me all these other abilities soon. I'll level. For some reason, he could not stop talking. I met this guy, Hiro. He's good. They're trying to recruit me, but I don't know, Master Sugihara. Seki yawned. I don't think I'm ready. It starts with believing that you can do it, said Master Tsujihara. Doesn't really follow, commented Seki. Master Tsujihara filled the two cups again. Come, have another drink. Seki looked at him. You're really doing this. He wondered what would happen when you were 100% drunk. Explore every option, said Master Tsujihara. Seki laughed. Fine, if that's what we're doing. He downed the liquid and lay back on the roof, which gave him a perfect angle to observe the white, gentle full moon. I knew someone once who really appreciated the full moon, the old man said. You know, we all have to do what we think is right. You too, Seki. The moon was mesmerizingly detailed with its canyons and shades of faint gray, and Seki remembered thinking that it was one of the most beautiful scenes he had ever seen. The next thing he knew was that something icy had brushed against his hand, and everything was unbelievably bright. Seki opened his eyes and felt the hard tiles underneath his body. He sat up and found himself still on the roof. The sun was high in the sky and warm on his body, and Master Tsujihara was nowhere in sight. Then he noticed an arrow sticking out from one of the tiles beside him. A quick check revealed a tiny graze on the back of his hand that was quickly fading, confirming that the arrow had been what had woken him up in the first place. He had seen the arrow before. This one had a message wrapped around it. "So apparently you're a good shot, too," said Seki under his breath to the absent Shosei. He did not even bother to search for the man, since he knew well that if he wanted to be seen, he would make his own entrance. He unfolded the piece of paper to read. "Follow the wall north for 400 paces." Seki wondered if that was where he had to go to secure his next ability from Shosei. If it was indeed that, he was not as enthusiastic about it as he thought he should be.
"Seki!"
Sato's head had appeared above the edge of the roof.
"You seen Master Tsujihara?"
he asked as he looked around the roof for the old man. The tray and the cups were gone, and Seki made a mental note to ask Master Tsujihara later about the wine. He was not even sure if it was real sleep he had just had, but it was blessedly dreamless. Seki shook his head.
"Not since last night."
Sato sighed in slight annoyance.
"Is he out at the east gate again? I need to ask him about the flooring. How are we going to get the dojo up and running again if he keeps disappearing?"
"You've made good progress," Seki said. "For one day."
"Definitely not one day,"
Sato muttered. Then he craned his neck back.
"What is this now?"
Sounds of hooves were drawing near, and soon five riders in Shinchioka Army's black and red appeared at the entry of the back courtyard. Seki instantly recognized one of them.
"Is Master Tsujihara here?"
Lieutenant Kato shouted as he spotted Sato on the ladder. Sato turned to look.
"No, we would like to know where he is, too."
Seki leaned over the edge of the roof.
"Lieutenant Kato!"
The lieutenant, now fully recovered from his injury, saluted Seki. He let out a short breath as he glanced around and thought. Then he said,
"Commander Nakatani asked me to come fetch Master Tsujihara, but he said if the man's not in, maybe you could go in his place. It's rather urgent."
"What is it about?" asked Seki.
"I wasn't told. Come on."
The lieutenant nodded. "Could use a quest," said Seki to himself. Somehow he did not think he had completed the last one. "Quest accepted. To the palace again. Level 8. To the palace again. Level 8 quest information. Go with Lieutenant Kato to see Commander Nakatani in the palace district. You will receive 55 XP. "More experience for drinking than this," Seki noticed with amusement as he climbed down the ladder. The sleep did him good, and despite everything being brighter than usual, he felt refreshed. Thinking back to the last quest, Seki could not help but wonder if he had learned anything from Master Tsujihara that he did not already know.
"Tanaka," said Lieutenant Kato to one of his four subordinates.
Tanaka, a serious-looking man with a mustache, knew what his superior meant and dismounted.
"Seki, do you know how to ride?" asked the lieutenant.
Seki was starting to guess what this was about.
"I think I have an idea how to."
Lieutenant Kato took that as a yes. He ordered another soldier, called Ogawa, to stay with Tanaka in case the old master came back. Tanaka led the gray horse to Seki, who, following examples he had witnessed from various sources, slid his right foot through the stirrup and helped himself up onto the beast. The mount snorted gently and shook its head from side to side. The lieutenant quickly gave him the basics on how to steer, how to speed up and slow down, and how to brace himself during gallops, which Seki was certain were severely simplified versions from their real-life counterparts.
"Follow me," said the lieutenant as he urged his horse out the courtyard door.
He started with a walk, into a canter, then a gallop, and Seki followed him. It was easier than Seki had imagined, but still took some mild effort in balancing himself. They made their way down the empty South City alley and soon emerged on Trade Street, which was also completely vacant save for a few citizens. Seki figured the whole city must have been instanced for his riding training.
"Can't let me loose on the streets just yet, right, Lieutenant?"
Seki joked.
"Now that you've got the basics, we can start," said Lieutenant Kato as he instructed Seki to focus his energy on his feet.
While Seki did, he felt his energy flowing out and Tanaka's horse sprinted forward.
"Congratulations. You have learned a new skill. Riding. Level 1.
The energy was draining quite quickly, and when they reached the second intersection, it was almost completely used up. Lieutenant Kato slowed down. As you become a better rider, you will learn how to use less and less energy so you can sustain speed for longer periods. The lieutenant raised three fingers. Your speed depends on three factors. Your riding skill, the terrain, and the quality of your horse. Master Hoto, just outside the West Gate, can teach you more about it. He also has fine horses for sale. How much would that cost? Asked Seiki. I wouldn't know. Ranked officers are given official mounts. If you are properly in the Shogun's army, he will offer you one. Seiki remembered he had something to ask. Do Obake mounts run over water? After all, Suguru's mount, just like the man, had no shadow. Lieutenant Kato seemed surprised at the question. In fact, they do, after the rider has obtained a certain level of skill. Ah, Seiki saw the attraction now. The horse will most likely throw you off once it gets injured, and you cannot use damaging abilities when mounted, unless you're on the battlefield, the lieutenant went on. Except if you're a samurai, said Seiki. Lieutenant Kato looked at him in slight puzzlement. Why, yes. Once they're at a certain level of skill, they do learn one horseback attack outside of the battlefield. You said they, lieutenant, said Seiki. Aren't you one? The lieutenant laughed. You certainly ask a lot of questions. He then spurred his horse ahead, and Seiki's energy had recharged enough for him to practice sprinting after him again. It was an interesting experience to have the whole city instanced just for him, and Seiki asked to try going a bit out of the way to practice. Lieutenant Kato did not seem to mind and told him he would wait at the palace district gate. Seiki galloped off on the relatively deserted streets of West City and could feel joyous laughter creeping up on him as the wind blew in his face and tousled his hair. Like running, there was no muscle fatigue in riding beyond the energy used for sprints. He wondered of what quality this horse was and how much faster he could eventually go. Time seemed frozen and the sun remained high in the sky. After riding to his heart's content, Seiki made his way toward the palace district, where Lieutenant Kato and his men were waiting with admirable patience. Let's go, he said simply, not in the slightest bothered by the fact that the quest was supposed to be urgent. The lieutenant led Seiki through a number of turns and courtyards to one building on the side that he had not yet seen. On the lawn in front of the building were several groups of soldiers, who stood to attention as the lieutenant passed them. Lieutenant Kato got off his mount at the front door of the two-storied building painted red with a black roof. It was not quite as big as Taira Mansion, but it had an important air about it that was somehow rather fitting. They found Commander Nakatani in one of the inner chambers.
Thank you, Lieutenant, said the commander as he beckoned Seiki to sit down.
Lieutenant Kato was about to take his leave, but the commander told him to stay.
I like your opinion, too, said Commander Nakatani.
The lieutenant then took position beside them.
Seiki, said the commander. I sent Kato to fetch you since I wish to discuss something.
He was staring at Seiki so intently that Seiki realized that it was not Master Tsujihara he had wanted to see in the first place. Seiki glanced at Lieutenant Kato, who seemed a bit surprised, but said nothing.
I know Tsujihara was not there, Kato, said the commander as if he had read the man's mind before turning his attention back to Seiki. I think there is something you ought to know.
Seiki glanced uneasily at the lieutenant again. This was a quest, so Seiki would have come anyway. He was not quite sure why this mildly sinister air was necessary. Lieutenant Kato seemed as puzzled as he was.
Shinshioka once had a mighty army called the Morishige Army, said Commander Nakatani.
At this, the lieutenant shifted uncomfortably.
In those times, it was led by Commander Kato, Nakatani continued. One day, without warning, an army of demons came down the mountain in relentless waves, and wherever they rode, shadows fell. They outnumbered us 3-1, and our losses were high.
Seiki assumed this was the history lesson he was supposed to get from Master Tsujihara.
Not knowing what they were, we worked day and night to find answers. A priestess discovered a clue in an ancient text and managed to locate within the Imperial Treasury several pearls of light. And we found that the shadows shrank away from their radiance. With the power of the pearls, the tide started turning, and we pushed them back further and further into the mountains. One day, there was a decisive battle on the foot of the Shadow Mountains.
Lieutenant Kato coughed. May I excuse myself, Commander?
No. I think it's time you hear the full story, said Commander Nakatani.
The young lieutenant clenched his fists and averted his gaze. Seiki had heard this story in bits before from the escort quest. The commander continued.
Commander Kato led an army of 50,000 men, with the intention to wipe them out once and for all with the largest of these pearls, or as they became known later, Seeds of Light. The demons fled, and the army pursued them deep into a valley in the mountains when another kind of darkness fell. This one had a name. Kaganushi, the Lord of Shadows. I think you met him, Seki.
Seki nodded.
The demon offered to let them live if they were to hand over the light pearl. Commander Kato was prepared to have it destroyed, rather than let it fall into the demon's hands. I think you know what happened next.
Seki nodded again, sparing the young lieutenant the details of his father's death. From what he remembered, Commander Kato refused to give in and was slain by the Shadow Lord.
After that, the demon started killing our soldiers. A wave of his hand and 100 would drop dead as he demanded the pearl.
Siki's jaws tightened. He had seen an example of that with his own eyes.
Then Captain Okamoto spoke up and offered to make the trade. The light pearl for the lives of 50,000 men.
He paused and sighed.
The demon kept his word, and the army was spared.
The commander's voice turned bitter.
But the shogun was greatly displeased, and afterward he ordered Captain Okamoto to be executed as a traitor.
Seki had not expected that of the shogun. Lieutenant Kato seemed to have heard this part and showed only great uneasiness, but no surprise. There was a short silence, and Seki remarked that the commander was looking at him.
Among those who spoke up against this decision was Okamoto's friend and comrade in arms, Captain Tsujihara.
Even without hearing the full story yet, Seki did not like where this was going.
"So is that why Master Tsujihara left the shogun's service?"
he asked as calmly as he could manage.
"Yes."
Commander Nakatani stared at the ground for a second.
"This might be difficult for you, Seki, but I have someone I would like you to hear from."
The door opened and a man in merchant clothes came in. It took Seki a while to recognize Minami from the carpentry shop. He sat down beside the commander with a grim expression.
"Yesterday I received an anonymous message on an arrow," said the commander, "suggesting that I spoke to Minami-san here about a particular fire, one that Tsujihara failed to mention in his letter when he recommended you to me."
He gestured to the carpenter.
"Would you mind telling this young man what you told me earlier?"
Fidgeting about, Minami explained himself.
"It was not a common fire at the dojo. It was black powder that caused the explosion."
"That doesn't prove anything," said Seki. Commander Nakatani exhaled.
"Look, Seki, why would he have black powder at the dojo? I checked with the merchants, and there was indeed a shipment of 30 kegs of black powder to Nansei Dojo, which got picked up by one of his students under his master's orders."
"From what I saw," said Minami, "the explosion was caused by no more than 2 kegs of black powder, or it would have been much more powerful, which means the rest is somewhere else." Right then, Seki knew what Shosei's letter alluded to, and he could feel it burning in his pocket. "Still," he said, rather hastily, "that still doesn't prove anything." Commander Nakatani grimaced.
"There's one other piece to the puzzle, Seki. Tsujihara used to be very fond of a woman called Hanai. Her father later gave her hand in marriage to Okamoto, with Tsujihara's blessing, since Okamoto was also very dear to him."
The commander breathed again very deeply before he continued.
"After Okamoto was executed, Hanai killed herself and set their family mansion on fire."
Siki stared at them as the commander came to the inevitable conclusion.
"Your master blamed the shogun, Seki. He is out for revenge."
Quest completed. Night on the roof. Level 8. 85 XP gained. Quest completed. To the palace again. Level 8. 55 XP gained. A chill ran down Siki's spine. These were the worst quests he had ever done. Chapter 17. It was dusk again in East City, where uneven shadows of abandoned buildings grew long and enshrouded the narrow alleyways in an atmosphere of mystery. Any cautious city dweller, especially one with fewer than 2 digits of level of boast, would be very wise to steer clear of this part of town and pick a more patrolled route instead. Safety was the last thing on Seiki's mind, though, as he ran through the winding roads of East City. In fact, he had not even noticed the slight jump in the time flow after he exited the instance into the crowded Shinchioka once more. Disturbing thoughts were spinning in his head. He had directly asked Master Sugihara, and the old man had looked into his eyes and told him straight up that he had no intention of betraying the shogun. Some things did not make sense, but Seki was too troubled to clearly think them through. He knew now what the message meant, 400 paces along the wall. Not the South City Dojo wall, but outside the east gate along Shinchioka's city wall, where Master Tsujihara was supposedly storing black powder ready to blow half the palace up. Sato had dropped him a hint earlier with his complaint. Even Master Tsujihara had been dropping him hints. After all, the last thing the old man had said to Seki was to do the right thing. It was so simple. Now that Seki thought more about it, perhaps it had been very obvious. Commander Nakatani had expected him to know where Master Tsujihara was, and Seki conveniently had the message from Shosei right in his pocket to be handed to them, which was exactly what Seki did not do. He was a bad liar, so he made no attempt at trying to be convincing when he told them that he would go look around and let them know if he encountered the old man. The commander and lieutenant, and even Minami the carpenter, gave him a puzzled look as he hastily ran off. The palace district was almost empty when he left. On his way through it, Seki had looked over his shoulder to make sure he was not being followed, despite a part of him telling himself that it was all predetermined and no matter what he did, nothing would matter. At this point, he did not know what to believe. Every thought that came up equally upset him, so the only thing he knew was that he had to speak to Master Sugihara. East City was still unfamiliar territory, and Seki found himself following the same road the ambassador procession did. It allowed him to stay within range of street lamps and keep track of where he was. But Seki hardly noticed his surroundings as he replayed his interactions with the old man over and over and wondered what he had missed, and why, and whether all that had meant nothing. "Of course it means nothing," Seki cried furiously. "It's not even real." A few passers-by turned to stare, but Seki could not care less. He had no idea what he would say or if it would have any bearing on the consequences. The east gate soon came into view. The distinctive shape of the gigantic azure dragon looking over its back was now lit by flickering lamplights, which gave the decorative beast a strangely ominous air. This was the first time Seki set foot outside the city. This gate, like its western equivalent, was heavily guarded by patrols who kept a close watch on the steady trickle of people going in and out, mostly on horseback. Seki followed them and looked for the wall, stretching northward in a straight line. There was no path in that direction. Ahead was a thin pine wood that would not be too difficult to navigate through. 400 paces, Seki thought, and he started counting. 1, 2, 3.
Going somewhere?
It was a woman's voice in a chilly tone that could only have belonged to an obake. Seki turned and found Ryoko of the Rogami clan, level 26, sitting on her shadowless pale gray horse, her long dark hair pinned loosely in a graceful knot that fell on her left shoulder. Her lips curled in a cold smile.
Good evening, Seki.
At that moment, her companion emerged from the shadows, urging his horse in closer to check who she was talking to. Suguru of the Rogami clan, level 23, seemed delighted as he recognized Seki.
It's you. Kojiro has been talking about you. He was severely disappointed by the disruption last time.
These were the last people Seki wanted to see right now. He glanced to the patrols sitting idly on their horses in groups. He was still within range of the city, and perhaps that was why the clan members had not yet attacked him.
So where are you off to now, Seki?
Said Ryoko casually.
Kojiro is around here somewhere, said Suguru. I'm sure he would love to see you.
Seki knew these people had nothing to gain from killing him, but he did not doubt they would go out of their way to do so just because they could.
Not in the mood for a chat?
Asked Ryoko.
Oh, we won't bother you then, ne, Suguru?
She waved her hand as if speaking to a child.
Go on, run off.
The smile on Suguru's lips was all Seki needed to confirm that his suspicion was right. The moment he stepped out of range of the patrols, they would do what they could to inconvenience him.
Don't tell me you're scared of the wilderness, said Suguru.
Seki took a deep breath. He would not fall for that trick. If there was something he had learned from his martial arts training, it was how to take a slight. At this moment, he was more upset by Master Tsujihara than anything these people could do, and getting himself killed right now was not going to help his cause. Ignoring them, he slowly made his way back into the city gate. He would need to find another way out.
Oh, Seki-chan,
said Ryoko.
Giving up already? Don't let Suguru scare you.
Suguru cried, Kojiro! Apparently, there were quite a few other Rogami clan members waiting around in the area. And while Seki was certain it was definitely not for him, he could not help thinking how terrible the timing was. From the side, Kojiro of the Rogami clan, level 23, joined them on his black horse. He grinned at Seiki.
Ah, he said.
Seiki kept walking. Kojiro studied him for a moment.
Ah, he said again. It's about time. Trying to get to that traitor.
From behind, Seiki could hear Ryoko draw a short breath with interest.
I see.
Seiki denied them the satisfaction of a response. Kojiro spurred his horse toward him. The rings on the gigantic Oni cleaver jiggled in rhythm as he slowed his mount to a steady walk alongside Seiki.
I can tell you what happens next, he said, smiling. I'm sure you're dying to know.
Seiki bit his tongue and stopped himself from answering. It was not their business. It was not Commander Nakatani's business. This was purely between him and Master Tsujihara. Deep down, he knew it was not true, but he did not care.
He's upset,
said Ryoko.
That his master lied to him. Am I right?
Seiki hated the fact that she was right. He was not quite sure why the Obake was so well-versed in his quest line. He also hated himself for actually caring more than he should. Ryoko let out a little laugh.
And he thought he was so special,
she said. Seiki clenched his fists as he reminded himself they were trying to provoke him. They were already passing the patrols, who had somehow managed to sense the tense air and frowned at them.
Play nice now, said one of them.
Kojiro, eyes still fixed on Seiki, cried to his clanmates,
Do you think Taiona would mind bailing me out right now?
Of course he would mind, very much,
said Ryoko.
I'll tell him to let you sit this one out.
Kojiro ignored her and sped up his horse to block Seiki's path, his eyes gleaming with delight.
Let's play now, right here in front of the patrols.
Kojiro, cried Suguru.
Kojiro shrugged as he continued to talk to Seiki.
You're going to parry the first strike. Then what? No energy. Are you then fighting or running?
He grinned.
Prison or the morgue?
Seiki saw no way out of this one. The man was right that he could parry the first attack, which, taking into consideration the level disparity, would be lethal and would therefore cost him all his energy. Then there was nothing else he could do except perhaps to try to dodge the Oni cleaver and hope that he would survive long enough for the patrols to get to Kojiro. Slowly he reached for his sword and Kojiro's eyes lit up with delight. Don't. It took a split second for Seiki to realize that someone was talking to him. However, it was not a voice, but rather like the information that popped into his head whenever he stared at something. He froze and glanced around for its source. Kojiro's eyes narrowed as he saw Seiki hesitating.
Trust me, walk away. If he touches you, he's in for a little surprise.
Come on, don't be a coward. It's a gamble, cried Kojiro.
Since neither the prison nor the morgue was an ideal outcome at this moment, Seiki decided to trust the mysterious voice. Ryoko had noticed something amiss and urged her horse toward them.
What is it?
The more, the merrier. Seiki forced his hand back to his side and started to walk toward the city gate. Deciding to ignore, perhaps, his earlier better judgment, Kojiro grabbed his large blade.
The morgue, then?
He sounded a little disappointed. Don't parry. Don't dodge.
No, Kojiro!
Cried Ryoko. It was too late. Kojiro had swung his Oni cleaver. Seiki held his breath to stop himself from reacting. The gigantic blade cut through the air in an intimidating swish, and Seiki winced as he braced himself for the blow. Suddenly, he felt the air warming and thickening around his body. The Oni cleaver struck him in the back and felt like a dab of sponge. Kojiro let out a surprised cry and fell off his horse. Then everything happened at once. The city patrols yelled and Seiki spun around to look, just in time to see Kojiro bleeding heavily on the ground as the patrols zapped him away. Ryoko cursed and galloped back out the city gate as the patrols shouted to ask if she was with him. A few people had stopped to watch the spectacle. But since it all happened so fast, most of them just stared in confusion for a few more seconds before dispersing. Seiki, not any less puzzled, looked around once again for the mysterious person who had just helped him. Unfortunately, there were too many people. "Where are you?" Seiki asked out loud. The voice did not answer, so Seiki shouted, "Thanks!" East Gate soon returned to normal and the patrols went back to their positions. With nothing exciting to view, people shrugged and went on their way, guessing that it was a flash brawl. Seiki turned back, determined to leave the city once again. Why did I just save you if you're so set on getting killed by these Rogami kids? Seiki stopped in his tracks. He could still not locate the person, but whoever it was must be within earshot of his shout. He studied the windows of the nearby buildings. They were either shuttered or empty and dark.
I have to get out, said Seiki aloud.
Find another way. They are camping this gate. That's two Obake we're talking about, plus a few more coming to join them now. I can't save you from all that.
The person must be somewhere within range, but high enough that they could see what was going on outside the gate, Seiki figured.
He scanned the surrounding buildings and found one with a little cabin-like structure attached to the roof. Its windows were facing every direction, one of which seemed to directly overlook the east gate and would serve as a good vantage point.
Seiki ran into the building, a high-ceilinged storage house, and climbed the ladder leading up to the second floor.
Yoko, level 12, and Takuya of the Honor Warriors, level 16, were sitting side by side on the flooring with their backs against the wall and appeared embarrassed when Seiki barged in.
Sorry, cried Seiki as he searched for a way up to the little cabin on the roof.
Visibly, the floor ended there, so he poked his head out a window. As he suspected, there was a thick rope hanging down. Seiki grabbed it, pulling on it to test his strength.
You're not going to find me there.
Not what I'm doing, Seiki shouted to his invisible conversation partner. The rope seemed sturdy enough, and he slowly pulled himself up. Yoko and Takuya had come to the window and were observing him questioningly.
Oh, sorry, not talking to you, said Seiki.
They must have thought he was crazy. The wind was chilly, as it tended to be when everyone was hanging outside a building and quite a distance from the ground. The rope ended just outside the window, tied around a large rusty hook. Seiki swung himself legs first into the cabin and landed rather ungracefully on what appeared to be rotten wood and hay.
See? No one.
Seiki laughed.
I'm not looking for you since I know you don't want to be seen, he shouted again.
The view from the third floor was rather nice. Seiki took a moment to look out from the cabin's four windows, which revealed a scene slightly different from what he had experienced from the rooftop with Master Tsujihara. The city here was livelier and a little shadier, since it was East City after all. The buildings were taller and limited his view, although he could still make out the palace looming over the entire district. Seiki rubbed his chin pensively. Now that he knew what the Shogun was capable of, he would have to rethink how he felt about the whole business. In the sky, a sliver of new moon was hanging low in a strangely starless sky, giving off almost no light.
Of course, even the moon is fake, Seiki muttered.
He was not sure exactly why, but he felt as if he had been set up for this. The window facing east was the one he sought. As he had hoped, the eastern wall rose up almost as high as the window, and on top was the serpentine decoration stretching all the way from above the gate to the left. Outside the gate, just beyond the patrols, lingered a group of Rogami members, in the midst of whom he recognized the two Obake, Rieko and Suguru. Also, there now was Tayora, with his heavily armored mount, and three other members Seiki had never met before. They were all sitting on their horses in a loose circle, as if in a discussion. Seiki peeked to the left. The ornamental dragon was pointing northward along the wall, and it ended with a spiked, fin-like tail that curved upward toward the sky about three gate lengths away. If Seiki could reach the dragon and then make his way along its body, perhaps he could drop down on the other side of the wall further away from the Rogami people and from there go unnoticed. The wall was high, but if he remembered correctly, you could survive three stories of fall with armor. With his hand holding tightly to the edge of the window, Seiki lowered himself onto the slanting roof. This put him slightly lower than the top of the wall, but at the same time, it would help with his running speed so he might be able to use his momentum to propel himself through the air. He would then need to grab hold of one of the spikes on the dragon's back. It was an 8 feet gap. He knew he should not look down, but he did anyway, and the ground looked very, very far away. Seiki took a deep breath and aimed at one of the spikes.
You sure about this?
Seiki almost jumped. He had forgotten the mysterious stranger was still watching.
How are you doing this telepathy thing?
Seiki could not help asking.
Shrug.
I have no other way, said Seiki, answering the question. With another deep breath, Seiki sprinted down the roof and leapt off its edge, perhaps a little too soon. He flew forward in the air and slammed into the dragon's side. His hand reached for the nearest spike, which brushed against his fingers as it slipped off his grip. Clawing at the dragon's body, he struggled to hold on, but the ceramic tiles that made up its scales were slippery and offered no support. As the ground rushed up to meet him, Seiki was certain he was dead. His body went completely numb on impact, but his head was clear as strength of will automatically kicked in. If not for the desperateness of his situation, it would have been a little funny that he had managed to hang on to life at such a low percentage. Seki lay there for a moment before he could sit up and breathe deeply. Not a good idea.
I haven't got a better one, said Seki as he got up. His health was still below a fifth, and it would be a while before he could attempt another jump. He had been so close, though. If he could just time his leap off the edge perfectly, he was sure he could make it. He walked back into the storage house and up the second floor, where Yoko and Takuya stared at him in disbelief. He raised his hand in apology and started climbing up the rope again.
Why not just wait? They are ambushing someone, and once that's done, they will be gone.
Seki exited through the window and sat on the sill, his feet resting on the roof as he waited for his health to creep back up.
I need to go see someone now. I can't wait.
Once you get to the other side, then what? Jump off the wall?
Seki was aware that it sounded completely stupid.
Pretty much, yeah. If I survive the fall on this side, I'll survive the fall on the other side.
He wondered if there was a trick to landing that would lessen the damage.
All right, let's see how this goes.
Seki was checking his HP when he felt a powerful, sparkly white heal on him, even more powerful than Akumi's, which immediately filled his health.
You're a Hoshi, he cried.
Go on, then.
Seki jumped again, and it turned out, very much to Yoko and Takuya's annoyance, that it took him two more tries before he finally managed to grab hold of one of the spikes on the dragon's back. Each time, the mysterious Hoshi helped to top up his health. In the last attempt, Seki had launched off the very edge of the roof and slammed onto the side of the dragon's body so hard that it almost knocked the wind out of him, but his hand managed to reach the ceramic spikes and he clung on as tightly as he could while he caught his breath.
Thank you,
he said to the Hoshi after he had recovered and pulled himself up into a better position. He was now lying flat on the dragon's back with Shinchioka to his left. Ahead, on his right-hand side, beyond the wall, was a pine wood, his destination. Slightly behind and below him was the road that led from the east gate into what appeared to be a dark expanse of grassland.
You're welcome. This was rather interesting. Good luck, Seki.
Will you at least tell me your name?
Seki asked, so he would know to whom he owed his gratitude. But there would be no more answer. Seki managed to get one leg up and one foot on the body of the dragon, and with his hands holding onto the spikes on its spine, he could make his way toward its tail, where he presumably would be able to drop down the other side of the wall without being detected. But Ogami members were still gathered in a loose group. From higher grounds, Seki could make sense of some of their conversation as he inched his way forward along the statue.
Such a thing, Tayora was saying.
Ryoko seemed upset.
I'm pretty sure it was them. That was Mirror Ward.
A lot of high priests have that.
A handful. And I'm pretty sure he used an old form of whisper.
That's a crazy claim, Ryoko. Did you hear it? Did Kojiro?
The boy didn't flinch. He knew, and a few seconds before that, he didn't.
Spoil our plan, too?
Army with them.
Seki was moving further and further away and could hear nothing more. It made him confident that they would not be able to catch him jumping off the wall later. The dragon's body twisted in big waves, and the slope up proved a bit of a challenge. Seki planned to go as near the tail as possible and drop from the lowest point in the wave to save himself as much damage as possible. He was now starting to think about what he would say to Master Tsujihara when he found him. At that moment, he heard a soft whistle that sounded very much like a tiny flute. The source of the sound seemed very near, and Seki searched for it. He quickly noticed that in the middle of one of the spikes, drilled into the ceramic, was a small hole. When the breeze blew through it, it made a gentle, high-pitched whistle that was rather pleasant on the ear. The tiny hole was sparrow-shaped. The spikes were green. Seki's eyes widened as he recalled something.
A green sparrow sings her song in the evening gale, he whispered.
Until now, he had completely forgotten about the clue. Without thinking, he touched the spike with the sparrow-shaped hole and realized almost immediately that he should not have. The ceramic scales underneath him slid open like a trapdoor and dropped him into the darkness below. He ended up in water, and rather deep, too, as he had fallen from quite a height. He struggled to the surface, noting that it was not difficult to swim in his clothes, not to mention with a sword on his waist. Around him appeared to be an underground room with echoing sounds of water. He spotted a tiled ledge and he swam toward it to haul himself up. That was when he learned that from the room, there seemed to be an underground tunnel that led in all directions.
Of course,
he said to himself, he was probably under East City, and if above ground was a labyrinth, it was hardly surprising that there would be an underground sewage labyrinth to match as well. The tunnels held dim torches along the walls, and everywhere were sounds of water sloshing, splashing, dripping.
The air was damp and unpleasantly musty, and Siki could not wait to get out of there. He did not know what he had just gotten himself into, but he supposed the best thing to do was simply to pick a direction and cross his fingers. The room he had ended in seemed to be where all the water was flowing into, and he made his way upstream along the paved banks, noticing how loud the echo of his footsteps sounded in such a closed space. He turned a corner, and another, and found himself nowhere nearer to getting himself out of the place. Starting to feel a little claustrophobic, Seki halted to recalibrate and think of a better plan. Strangely, the echo of footsteps did not stop, which could only mean that Seki spun around and found himself staring into the snarling face of a crazed demonic beast, level unknown, HP 24,900 of 24,900. Seki gaped in disbelief. The beast was slimy black with red protruding eyes. It was twice as big as a bear and had a long face and a parted mouth lined with rows of sharp teeth. It seemed four-legged, with long, clawless limbs, and its tail was like a lizard's. Seki only had time to draw his sword when it leapt at him with a roar. He parried its bite, and his sword struck it on the side of its face. He was a bit taken aback to find he still had plenty of energy to spare. So without delay, he spun around into a sweeping blade, which pushed the demon backward by a few feet. Crazed demonic beast. Level unknown. HP 24812 of 24900. It jumped at him again with both legs forward, and there was no space to dodge except into the sewage water. Siki parried once more, canceling its attack, and followed up with a focus strike directly at its chest. Crazed demonic beast, level unknown, HP 24721 of 24900. He was nearly out of energy except for a few more parries. Thus, for some time, he slashed at it with his normal moves, which felt like cutting through a sap-covered tree. The black slime clung onto the blade, making it heavier and heavier. Siki swept Hikari through the air, casting off the slime, and the beast roared and continued to charge in with other attacks. This kind of health was impossible. Siki's energy charged just enough for a focus strike, and he used it immediately, dropping the demon's health less than a meager 100. The beast did not even flinch as it took each blow, and the slime that covered its body flowed forth to cover its wounds. Siki relentlessly struck it again and again, with a combination of energyless focus strike and sweeping blade. Although it was easy not to take damage, after a while Siki was starting to think he was trapped in an endless nightmare, and his concentration began to slip. There was no muscle fatigue, but mental fatigue was real as he dodged, parried, and attacked. Changing tactics, the beast spun around with its tail whipping at Siki. He was out of energy, but he could only try to parry. His hand went numb as the gigantic tail knocked Hikari out of his hand, slammed it against the wall, from which it bounced and slid dangerously near the edge of the water. Crazed demonic beast, level unknown, HP 24298 of 24900. The beast spun around again and Seki dodged its tail. However, with limited space, it slapped him across the shoulder in a glancing blow, which took a quarter of his health. Again, it leapt at him and he only had energy for one parry. Siki drew his Kohagane dagger and parried with it, not certain if it would work. It did, and knocked the tail aside. The beast then rushed in for a bite. Siki felt completely exhausted as he dodged yet another attack. He was fighting an unbeatable foe, and for the first time he felt like throwing in the towel. "Stand still and let this thing kill you," he thought. He would wake up in the morgue, and from there he would run back and go find Master Sugihara. But then even that did not matter anymore. He felt like giving it all up altogether. He was spent. He was tired of fighting, and he was so sick of worrying. "I don't know what to do," he yelled at the beast with its ridiculous amount of health. How could they expect him to do this at this level? There was no way to win this. The beast charged again. Half-heartedly, he parried, caring not that he had no energy, and he lost his Kohagane too, which clanked onto the pavement further away. The beast lurched at him, and Seki twisted to evade its bite when it reared up. Siki slid forward to avoid its front legs, but he did not try very hard at all, and its left leg knocked him to the ground, taking more than half his health. Siki rolled aside to escape another leg that came crashing down beside him. It would probably be over in a few seconds. All of a sudden, he discerned something. Stuck in the beast's belly was a large shard of black crystal that exuded dark smoke. The beast roared, and Siki used the last of his strength to reach for Hikari. He grabbed it and struck up in a most desperately ill-formed focus strike. The blade met the black crystal and Hikari burst with blinding light. Siki had to close his eyelids as he heard something shatter. When he opened his eyes, he found himself still in the dimly lit sewage. Around him, water was still splashing, sloshing, dripping. Ikari was in his hand and now only gave off its usual gentle glow. He sat up and discovered that he was not alone. A white horse with a silvery mane was standing peacefully a few feet away.